ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। वहं तमो महदहं कचरङ्गिवर्भु सहं देष्टितन्दकतसप्तवितस्तिकाय पेदृग्विद्विधाविगणितन्दपनानोखाय पाताद्वरोमविवरस्य च ते महित्वम्। Who am I? A small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand. I am enclosed in a pot-like universe composed of material nature. The total material energy, false ego, ether, air, water, and earth. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body just as particles of dust pass through the openings of a screened window. Purport by the followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 5, Text 72, Srila Prabhupada gives the following purport for this verse. When Lord Brahma, after having stolen all Krishna's cows and cowherd boys, returned and saw that the cows and boys were still roaming with Krishna, he offered this prayer in his defeat. A conditioned soul, even one so great as Brahma, who manages the affairs of the entire universe, cannot compare to the personality of Godhead, for he can produce numberless universes simply by the spiritual rays emanating from the pores of his body. Materialist scientists should take lessons from the utterances of Sri Brahma regarding our insignificance in comparison with God. In these prayers of Brahma, there is much to learn for those who are falsely puffed up by the accumulation of power. Unquote. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Volume 1, Chapter 14, Srila Prabhupada further comments on this verse. Lord Brahma realized his actual position. He is certainly the supreme teacher of this universe, in charge of the production of material nature, which consists of the complete material elements, false ego, sky, air, fire, water, and earth. Such a universe may be gigantic, but it can be measured just as we measure our body as seven spans. Generally, everyone's personal bodily measurement is calculated to be seven spans of his hand. This particular universe may appear to be a very gigantic body, but it is nothing but the measurement of seven spans for Lord Brahma. Aside from this universe, there are unlimited other universes outside the jurisdiction of this particular Lord Brahma. Just as innumerable atomic infinitesimal fragments pass through the holes of a screened window, so millions and trillions of universes in their seedling forms are coming out from the bodily pores of Mahavishnu. And that Mahavishnu is but a part of the planetary expansion of Krishna. Under these circumstances, although Lord Brahma is the supreme creature within this universe, what is his importance in the presence of Lord Krishna?
उत्केप्यनाम गर्भगतास्य पादयो किं कल्पते मातुरहोक्षजागसे
Kimasti nasti vyapadesha bhushitam prevasti kukshe kierapyananta. O Lord at Hokshirja, does a mother take offense when the child within her womb kicks with his legs? And is there anything in existence, whether designated by various philosophers as real or unreal, that is actually outside of your abdomen? Lord Brahma is, in this sloka, comparing himself to a baby child in the helpless condition of being within the womb of mother. Such a beautiful example, because this is truly the most helpless stage of one's life. When a baby child is outside the womb of the mother, very, very helpless, but still, such a child has some little control over his life. Not very much, but a little. It's like Nathji now has a grandson, Rishabhdev. He's starting to grab onto things. He's starting to make his own place in the world. But a child in the womb is so absolutely, utterly helpless that 24 hours a day from the umbilical cord of the mother, he's being nourished. He cannot go anywhere. He cannot do anything. He's completely helpless and totally under the control of the mother. What the mother eats, the child eats. What the mother drinks, the child drinks. What the mother hears, the child hears. The child in the womb is in a totally controlled, helpless environment. And completely 100% helpless. But Lord Brahma here, he is really giving all of us the most sublime realization that the whole cosmic manifestation is within the abdomen of the universal form of the Lord. That we are all like helpless baby children within the womb of our mother. That everything in creation is within the womb of Krishna. He said, whether designated or by various philosophers as real or unreal, everything is within your abdomen. And sometimes it is considered all over the world that God is our father and nature is our mother. Mother Nature. Actually, what this means is we are all within the womb like helpless child, depending on our Mother Nature. Just like the child is being provided through the umbilical cord of the mother, in the same helpless way, the Lord provides. Mother Nature provides the air. She provides the rain. She provides the sunshine. And within this womb of creation, whatever Krishna and Sri Radharani provide, that is all that we have. Therefore, in fact, we are like helpless children. and the greatest illusion, Lord Brahma is here speaking, is to think anything else. Therefore, Maya, frankly, means to think that we are the lord of material nature or to think that we are the controller. This is the greatest illusion. And this is the source of all bondage. Pungshastriya maitunim bhavametam tayormito hridya granti mahu athogri hakshetra sutapti vitaya janasya moho yamaham mameti. Lord Rishabhdev explains to his 100 sons that the conditioned soul thinks himself to be the enjoyer of his activities. And the foremost enjoyment is the enjoyment of the union between man and woman. Krishna is Purusha, we are all Prakriti. That means we are all meant to be enjoyed, and Krishna is meant to enjoy everything and everyone. But whether we are men or whether we are women, when we desire to be enjoying, to enjoy this world, that is the symptom of our envy toward the Purusha. We want to take his position. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, everything within this nature is his to enjoy, and we are thinking it is mine. And since time immemorial, philosophers have come up with so many wonderful poetic expressions to justify that it is all right to be the enjoyer. And modern civilization, with all its science, all its technology, and all its economic advancement, is simply misleading people on the path to bondage and hellish conditions. And people are in such illusion, they are so crazy, they are thinking that devotees of God, they are too much extremists. They are too much fanatics. Why can I not dance in the discos? Why cannot I drink some liquor? Why cannot I watch the television? Why cannot I smoke my cigarettes? Why can I not enjoy my empire? This is nothing but envy of God. If we accept that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, then we must accept that we are his servants, meant to be enjoyed by him, the way he wants to enjoy us. Not the way we want to be enjoyed, the way he wants to enjoy us. That is divine consciousness. But today, in the name of religion, all over the world, people do not want to surrender to God. They do not want to be enjoyed by God. But they simply want Bhagwan, by whatever name they call him, to facilitate their enjoyment, to facilitate greater and greater opportunities for them to control and lord it over material nature. And of course, in the Vedas, there is a division called Karma Kanda. And it explains, yes, if you want something, better to ask God or one of the devatas than to think you're independent and you can get it yourself. It's a little higher. At least it's on the path of accepting a higher authority above you. But Bhagavatam declares this to be Kaitava Dharma. Kicks it out. Dharma Projita Kaitavatra Parama Niramatsaranam Satam. Kicks it out. It is a sub-religious principle. It is a materialistic religion. Savaifung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir hokshaje ahoitaki apratihata shajatma suprasidati. Sarva-dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva-papebhyo moksha ishami masacha. Krishna says, abandon all of these varieties of religion. Surrender to my will. Do not fear. If you just surrender to me, I will protect you. People do not surrender to Krishna because they do not have faith that he will protect them. Out of illusion, we still think that I must protect myself. And therefore, we are working so hard, like asses, like mudhas, trying to make some arrangement to protect ourselves. But in the 11th chapter of the Gita, in the Virat Rupa, Krishna showed all of us how we're ultimately able to protect ourselves. Through the flaming mouths of time, Kala Rupa, Krishna is devouring everything and everyone. Who can protect themselves? Even the greatest conquerors of the world. Aurangzeb conquered so many parts of India. Napoleon conquered so many parts of Europe. Hitler conquered so many parts of the world. What to speak of Hiranyakashipu? He was a great conqueror too. But because of his disease, Lord Nrsimhadev, as Panditji Maharaj was explaining yesterday, he performed surgery upon Hiranyakashipu because he was a very diseased man. So all of these great conquerors, where are they today? In America, about 60 years ago, there was a very, very famous atheist. He was just very influential, and he converted so many tens, hundreds, and thousands of people to atheism. And he had an argument against God. He would go to various towns and villages, every town and village, to chant the names of atheism, and he would just gather so many thousands of people around him, and he would say, God, if you exist, I challenge you, strike me by lightning now and kill me, and if you cannot do it, that means you do not exist. And then he stood like this, he said, I'll give you 10 minutes to do it. I challenge, I defy that you are a coward or else you do not exist unless you can strike me dead. And no lightning bolts came. So he said, you see, there is no God. And foolish people would think, ah, correct, there is no God. Ah. But where is that man today? He's been eaten by worms in his grave. You see, God is great. God does not have to respond to the challenge of some insignificant, tiny, little, envious creature. In his own time, when he so desires, he will kill you. Not according to your schedule. Huh? If God were to strike him dead according to his demand, that means God would take his nonsense seriously. But he had to surrender to God's schedule. It's not that God had to surrender to his schedule. You follow? This is Krishna. In the force of time, he is consuming everyone, everywhere. Our Guru Maharaj used to use the example that the cat, When the mother cat carries the kitten in her mouth, the kitten feels very safe and protected, feels the love of her mother. But that same mother cat, when carrying a rat in her mouth, the rat sees the cat as death personified, with great fear and anxiety. What is the difference? The cat is the same. Her mouth is the same. According to how we approach her, she appears. Because the kitten is utterly surrendered with faith in the protection of the cat. The kitten sees the cat as the most loving, protective mother. But because the rat is always hiding from the cat, always trying to do something without the consent of the cat, therefore, that same rat in the same mouth of the same person sees their cat as the most fearful form of death. Krishna says in Gita, Jaya tamam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham mama vartmanu vartante manusya parata saravasha. As you approach me, I reward you accordingly. So Lord Brahma is here explaining this most wonderful universal truth, that I am like a child in your womb, completely depending on you. You are the supreme controller of all controllers. I am your eternal servant. Nothing happens without your will. He explains that all of these universes, which we think are so big and so great, are actually nothing more than little particles of dust coming from the pores of your body. It is explained that in Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda, what is her position? And here we are reading that Krishna is that supreme absolute whole, Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate, from whom all of the creation, all of the billions and trillions of universes are within his womb. That same Krishna, in his fullness and wholeness, appeared within the womb of Devaki and Yashodamai. So you can imagine the exalted position of these great personalities. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains a wonderful example in his commentary of the Bhagavatam of Krishna's birth. He explains that the Narayan or Vasudev feature of Krishna appeared within the womb of Devaki in Mathura. Because after all, the original Adipurusha, Govindam, never steps one foot out of Braj Bhumi, Vrindavan. In Mathura, he is Vasudev. In Vrindavan, he is Govinda. So simultaneous, at the exact same time that Lord Sri Krishna appeared in the womb of Devaki, he also appeared within the womb of Yashoda in Gokul. And Mother Yashoda, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this great Acharya, explains, she had twins. She had two children. One was Yogamaya, and one was Krishna, Gopal. And when Vasudev came across Jamuna with Vasudev Krishna, as soon as he was in Jamuna, the child fell from his hands And upon touching the Jamuna, he transformed from Vasudev Krishna to Govinda Krishna. Because there's different rasas in Mathura than Braj Vrindavan. In Mathura, he is king. In Vrindavan, he is Gopa. Similarly, when Akrura was taking Krishna out of Vrindavan, that Govinda Krishna, when he entered into the Jamuna, he became again Vasudev Krishna. So Krishna transformed himself into Gopal Bhav, the Bhav of Gopal. And then Vasudev went to the house of Jashodamai and he saw two little children. One was Krishna, one was Yogamaya Devi. So what happened is that child Krishna that he was carrying merged into the body of the child of Mother Jashoda. And then he took Yogamaya back to Mathura. So in this way, Mother Jashoda, she actually carried the child Krishna within her womb. So this is the supreme glory of bhakti. The Mayavadis, they want to be that supreme whole in whom everyone is within their universe, within their abdomen. They want to become God. I want to be that supreme controller who is maintaining everyone. But just see the bhaktas. The bhaktas defeat the Mayavadis in every way. Not only in argument, logic, and philosophy, but also the bhaktas, if they take the vatsalya ras like Mother Jashoda, even the supreme complete whole, the absolute truth, is completely dependent on them living within their abdomen. That is the power of bhakti. Nanda Maharaj, when he would come home from the cowherd, from the pastures of Brajbhumi in Mahavan, Krishna was just a very small child. And Mother Jashoda, she would say, Gopal, Nanda Baba has returned. Bring him his shoes. And with great trouble, he would lift his wooden sandals and put them on his head. And he would be walking like this, almost falling because of their weight. And somehow or other, with great effort, he would bring them and place them on the feet of his father. So here is the Supreme Godhead, the cause of all causes. From Govinda, even Mahavishnu is only a fragmental expansion. He is the maintainer, the creator, and the destroyer of everything that exists. And yet he is putting the wooden sandals of his father on top of his head. In other words, he is worshiping the feet of his devotee. And one day, Krishna, playing with Balaramji and his friends, they came home. And Balaramji told Mother Jashoda that today, Gopal has done a very bad thing. What has he done? He has eaten dirt. Mother Jashoda, although he's the absolute truth, in the Bhagavad Gita, the Virat Roop, he was eating Bhishma, he was eating Duryodhana, and he was eating Drona, he was eating everything, he was eating the entire universe. But Mother Jashoda, she's thinking, he is my child, and if he eats dirt, he will get sick, and he may even die. Why did you eat dirt? You should not eat dirt. Krishna said, no, I have not eaten dirt. Balaram said, he did eat dirt. And you see in Goloka, Gokula, there's two sides, Balaram's side and Krishna's side. So Balaram asked his friends, did he eat dirt? They all said, yes, he ate dirt. And Krishna went to his friends and said, "Mother, tell Mother Yashoda, did I eat dirt?" They said, no, he did not eat dirt. But because Balaramji was elder brother, Mother Yashoda was very much taking his words seriously. Why, you have eaten dirt? No, no, I have not eaten dirt. So I want to take a vote. Who believes that Krishna ate dirt? Raise your hand. Who believes that he did not eat dirt? So there's not too many people on Balaram's side here. But actually, we do not know. Shukadev Goswami does not say whether he ate it or not. He only says that they said he ate it. Huh? So this is an eternal mystery. One time someone asked our Gurudev, did Krishna eat the dirt or not? And Guru Maharaj said, you have to ask him. But then he said, but even if you ask him, he may not tell you the truth. So this is a mystery that even the greatest philosophers will never know. You can count all the universes and all the grains of sand within the universe, but you'll never know whether Krishna ate dirt or not. So Mother Yashoda was very much worried. Krishna, why you have eaten? No, no, I have not eaten dirt. Then you let me see within your mouth to see whether it is dirty. Yes, yes. So he opened his mouth. And when he opened his mouth, Mother Yashoda, she saw the entire cosmic manifestation. She saw all the universes and all the planets and all the demigods and all the mountains and all the oceans and all the rivers and all living beings. She even saw herself looking in Krishna's mouth. And she became struck with wonder. She was astonished. And with folded palms, in great reverence, she began to offer prayers that, my dear child, you are the absolute, you are the supreme Brahman. Everything is within you, and everything is coming from you. And I am so foolish that I was thinking that I was your mother, and sometimes I would chastise you, and sometimes I would hit you with stick, and sometimes I would punish you because of my ignorance. Please, I beg, forgive me. And then she began to offer great prayers of reverence to Krishna. Such a high realization. But Krishna did not like this high realization. It was no fun. He's the god of gods for so many. But at home he doesn't want to be the god of gods. Vrindavan is his home. He simply wants to enjoy the love of his devotees. And this understanding of his supremacy was interfering with the sweetness of the love of Mother Yashoda. In fact, the nature of the love of the Brijvasis was so much above and beyond the love of the self-realized soul who know the nature of Krishna as God. Therefore, Krishna closed his mouth and he smiled. And the beauty of that smile was so powerful and so attractive that everything Mother Jashoda had just seen, she completely forgot. All she could do is see the beautiful smile of her child. And that invoked such parental affection. Her breast just filled with so much milk that she just thought, oh, my dear child, please drink my milk. So God is all powerful. We read in many religions, in the Bible, in the Quran, about how God, He is such a powerful Father, that if you are a sinner, He strikes you down with bolts of lightning, or He casts you into the flames of hell. Or if you are a good person, He rewards you with great benedictions. But this is just a very insignificant part of the power of God. Above and beyond all the various energies of the Lord is the power of His beauty, the power of His sweetness, the power of His lila. Because simply by remembering the Lord, the beauty of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord, all of the bondage of this entire material creation is destroyed. This is the supreme power of Lord Hari. And all of that power is contained within His holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Therefore, this is the devotee's aspiration. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, by surrendering to the will of the Lord, to simply allow ourselves to be utterly attracted to Krishna and nothing and no one else. Tvai me nanya vishaya mathir madhu pate sakrit gangevam udangati. Queen Kunti prayed that, my dear Lord, as the Ganges, which begins at Gangotri in the Himalayas, as it constantly flows toward the ocean without being diverted to anything, let my heart's love only flow toward you without being diverted to anything or anyone else. You know, a woman is naturally very much inclined toward her children, toward the place where she lives, toward her in-laws and her parents. But Queen Kunti, she is praying, sever my attachment to my children, sever my attachment to my in-laws, to my families, to everyone. As the river Ganges forever flows to the ocean, let my attraction only flow to you without being diverted to anyone or anything else. That is my prayer. Let my heart be attracted only to you. Srila Jamunacharya, he was a great king, and he enjoyed all the luxuries and opulences of life. But after he became a great devotee of the Lord, he prayed that when I think of the pleasures of this world, which were so meaningful and so enjoyable to me throughout my life, even the ultimate pleasure of sex pleasure, when I think of these things, now that I have been engaged in your loving service, my Lord, and tasted the sweetness of devotion to you, the thought of these things, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl in distaste. This is devotion. To simply make our aim in life, Krishna. To simply make our goal to please the Lord by hearing His glories, by chanting His glories, by serving His devotees. Because after all, Maya is very strong. And sometimes it's so difficult to overcome the temptations of Maya, especially within our own mind. Lust, envy, pride, anger, greed, illusion. They are like insurmountable mountains trying to cross over. But the beauty and the mercy of Krishna is all-powerful. Srila Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he gives us actually a warning. He says, my dear friend, if you are attached to your wife, to your children, to your wealth, to your friends, to your society, then do not go to Keshi Ghat. Because standing on the bank of the Jamuna is the beautiful form of Govinda, Shyam Sundar. He is standing, Tribanga, with threefold bends in his form. His head is adorned with a beautiful peacock feather. His eyes like blooming lotus petals. And he is playing the fifth note of his flute. When you see that form, you will never be able to return home to enjoy any of the attractions that you are so much attached to now. This is the power and the beauty of Krishna. And a devotee is not so much aspiring to enjoy the beauty of Krishna, but a higher principle than that is to simply surrender our lives utterly to be enjoyed by the beauty of Krishna. To completely be exploited by that sweetness, by that love, and by that beauty. And it is in this mood, with this aspiration, that we chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Is there any questions?